are you getting into your garden? Don't know if you've noticed, but it's actually spring. I'm Leslie Harris, and I kind of am getting into my garden, kind of slowly and carefully, my little tiny garden. Our plant of the week is the Salix caprea. So fancy, it's actually just a pussy willow. And I chose it because it's in my garden. I'll be chatting with Mary Ann Wilburn. And what are we going to talk about? My garden. And then after she and I walk around, I'll talk about, sorry, guys. Yeah, that would be my garden. Well, you know, in the last episode, that was all about the Philly trends and kind of everybody else's theoretical garden and what they think and blah, blah, blah. So now I'm going to get a little bit selfish, but it won't take long because this is a pretty tiny garden. If you're new to this podcast, I moved about 6 months ago, maybe 7 months now, from a great big garden where I gardened here in Charlottesville. And now I'm in a tiny HOA where it's just amazingly small. But I did inherit some good things, and there was a gardener who lived there, and there's some lovely things in it. And my friend Mary Ann Wilburn, who has a huge garden, came to visit because she was speaking at a plant symposium in nearby Waynesboro, Virginia, and she and I took a stroll around, and she offers her opinion about what's going on for me right here. And I can summarize it by saying that she made it pretty clear that anything that's good that's going on here, yeah, that was done by my predecessor. Well, that's okay. It's mine now. And I have made some improvements. Actually, I made a whole new garden. The bowling alley was grass. The bowling alley is now a garden, even though there's not much in it. You'll hear more about that later. And another thing that I have in my new garden is a weeping pussy willow, or a Salix caprea. There are two weeping trees on this property, the previously unidentified Salix, which I was suspecting might end up to be some sort of ornamental cherry. But of course, I was wrong. And then I also have a weeping redbud. Other lachrymose, teary specimens include two dwarf weeping Japanese maples. What all four of these plants had in common when I moved in was a plethora of hair. Don't try to deny that you also lost brain cells at some time in your life by indulging in the Addams family, and therefore you know exactly who Cousin It is. And hopefully you know that this is not a great look in the garden. So I had a family of Cousin Its, each of whose hair, well, it was just doing its best to root right into the soil around it. You couldn't see anything except for hair. Now, I doubt there's anything horticulturally criminal about that situation, but for me, they look awful that way. I prefer to see the bones of the structure, particularly when it comes to the curving branches of a Japanese maple. And if you don't, if hirsute specimens don't bother you, please don't think I'm telling you that there's a right way and a wrong way to prune a tree. It's just my great preference to see sunlight and air and structure with plants like these. But back to the pussy willow. So what I probably have is the Salix caprea pendula. So it grows to about 6 feet tall, and mine's probably about 5 feet around. It has a pleasant gray bark, and I'm not quite sure that mine wants to stand up straight. There's evidence of a robust staking system. Well, there was, but I almost impaled my flip-flop feet on it last summer, so I've since removed all the metal bits. And if it wants to fall over, I say fine. I'm not quite sure I'm enchanted with it right now. Did you ever see those trees? And maybe you do this. And if you do, please don't take offense, because if we all had the same taste, life would be so boring. But I happen to not enjoy trees decorated with Easter eggs. That's just a thing for me, or it's a thing that's not for me. All the buds on the Salix have erupted in some sort of blousy Father Gila type bloom. And as I drive up to my house, if I'm returning from an errand, and I'm like, what the hell is all over that tree? It's getting my attention, and not in a calm and elegant sort of way. Maybe it just takes some getting used to. But back to the facts of the tree. The Salix grows in zones 4 through 8. Sadly, it is yet another non-native in my garden, being from Eurasia, although there are native pussy willows. I'm reading that the male blooms are sort of a pinkish gray, which is definitely not what I have, but I wouldn't call my blooms the greenish color that they're describing in the Missouri Botanical Database that a female should produce either. Salix caprea likes full sun, but it can go in part shade, and it likes moist but well-drained soil. I'm thinking it can do okay in unirrigated soil too, clay soil, not well-draining, because that's what it had all fall. I don't have an irrigation system, and I have Virginia red clay, and I see flowers on it. Of course, it's kind of disturbing, but we must remind ourselves that very stressed plants do throw up flowers in a last-ditch effort to procreate. I hope that's not what's going on here. But if it is, like I said, I'm fine with it. It has pleasant ovate green leaves, not spectacular fall color, kind of turns kind of yellow, but it's deer resistant, which is lovely. Although I don't seem to have deer here, fingers crossed, please, please, please. I'm reading that it's slightly invasive, and there are a few counties in mid-Atlantic states and out toward Indiana where it's been spotted in the wild. Not my county, though, so that wouldn't be my reason to rip it out. Oh, by the way, if you didn't grow the pendula and you just grew Salix caprea, that would get to about 15 to 20 feet tall, not 6 feet tall. And just so you know, Salixes love water, and you could use one in a rain garden. Those big guys also get about 15 feet across. Now, I'm reading that Salix caprea is prone to all kinds of bad things, such as mildew, blight, cankers, cracked bark. And actually, as I'm writing this, I'm staring at a sizable crack in my little guy's bark. Well, as I said, I'm just the owner because I inherited it, but I didn't choose it, and I'm not married to it, so we shall see what we shall see. And here's where I usually talk about how wonderful the plant of the week is and why I chose it and how I grow it, but as previously explained, it's just there. But it's definitely interesting, although this fakey sort of, the blooms are just so big. It's not really floating my boat right now, but I'm sure it'll grow on me, just like the rest of the garden. I mean, it's definitely charming in its own way, and it's new, and I love to learn about plants, so I hope I taught you a little something, too, about the Salix caprea, or pussy willow. Coming up, we're going to talk with Marianne Wilburn, and she and I are walking around this tiny little garden. The audio file is pretty darn good, considering we were just walking around holding our phones, but you'll notice it's a bit, shall we say, rustic. More rustic than my normal interview. Still, I hope you enjoy it. So I got Marianne here, and she's actually physically in the bowling alley, and we're looking up at the retaining wall, and she has thoughts.
I do. And they involve taking out a holly.
Hold it like this. Your microphone's here.
Oh. Okay.
Dummy. Yeah.
What? It's right here. I know how to do this.
Do you?
I do.
All right. Taking out a holly.
Well, yes. And I didn't want to say it as we were sitting in the living room last night.
But you did.
I did. Well, I sort of casually tried to mention it because Jeff was sitting there and I didn't want him to throw me out of his house.
He's a tree hugger.
Because that's right there. But do you see how it sort of blocks the view a little bit when you look straight out the window at it? And there's so much going on that hillside.
And there could be more. So what we have is a... I think instead of that just starting, I can get out the noise. So, and there could be more. What we have is an abundance of Spirea calicarpa with really beauty berry.
Uh-huh.
We have a couple of good hollies. I think definitely one should go. But as you look up there, every time I get sick of a calicarpa, which I think is going to be fairly often because they've self-sown, mm-hmm. I'll be like, and now I can have something else interesting. So I don't want it to be spotty dotty. I want there to be themes. But I definitely want more different plants, more textures.
Right, but you do have that theme of calicarpa, of spirea. You've got, it feels a little wild and woolly, which is nice. It feels like there's different textures in there, which is nice already that you can add to. Maybe mm-hmm. some broader leafed.
The Edgeworthia, I think.
Yeah, I think an Edgeworthia. If it can handle that intense sun all the time.
Maybe over there. There is that crepe myrtle will provide some shade.
Yeah, actually, that's a really good point. Oh, look at your cardinal in the tree.
Singing away. So it's up on top of this 5-foot-tall concrete wall, which listeners, you might have heard me say, oh, my God, I got to grow moss on this thing. And Marianne thinks it's not so bad.
I do not think it's bad at all. It gives a really nice old world look to this
bowling alley.
Mm-hmm. And just for the record, I did not say this is a bowling alley. But
it's quite narrow.
It's not cinder block. It's parged. It's got a beautiful patina. I like to say, but I don't think that...
I say patina.
You say patina?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, great.
You say tomato or tomato?
Well, this is the problem, is going to school in the UK has made it screwed me for things like... I say skeletal. Still stay skeletal instead of skeletal because I was looking at it.
Sometimes I come out with project because my daughter had one when we lived in Australia. She came home and said, I've got a project. I'm like, oh. So you know, when we go back home.
Some words like worm their way in and then they stay there and just embarrass you.
As if you're so affected.
So patina, the patina of this wall is lovely. It's got a beautiful greenish, little of terracotta in there, a little bit of browns. I love it.
And you can see where I try to paint it with the moss, and maybe something will come. Like, those are my drip marks from painting it. I mean, something will happen. Or I'll train the ivy over it. This summer's first idea is packets of nasturtium, morning glory, moonflower, just flopping over top of it.
This is what I always wanted to do with the retaining wall that was this tall in my last garden in Brunswick. And that... it was cinder block and it was uglier than hell, but that was like so last on the menu of things to do. If I had had this, I would have been smiling. Like, okay, here we go now. This is going to be fun.
And I did think about painting it or staining it or washing it.
Oh no. Nine
Fräulein. Okay. Yeah. Now we're on to German, but that would just be an ongoing maintenance thing.
Yeah, exactly. You paint that, it will peel.
Yeah. So we're going to walk to a different part of the garden, and I want you to listen to our boots as we walk on the marble. Because that way, ready?
The crunching sound. Yeah. That makes us official.
That makes us. We are so Gardener's Corner this morning. All right.
We just moved 5 feet.
Tell me about your jealousy about the hellebores that I've inherited.
Okay, so, you know, hellebores don't show up in enough gardens. I think when we were looking at houses, I remember clearly seeing a house that had hellebores of all of these different houses and thinking, oh my gosh, a gardener lives here. Because they're more popular now, but 10 years ago, you know, people weren't as into them. And so when you see a collection like this, you go, oh, wow, a gardener lived here. And this is a collection.
A lot of them are self-sown, but you just actually drooled over a couple, a yellow one.
Yeah, you've got a golden lotus over there, which I'd like to get my greedy little hands on half of that. You've got a bunch of doubles that are interesting doubles. And these are all hybridous. They're not all, but they are the Orientalis leading hybridus that seed themselves, but are interesting. Instead of just the ones that are in the trade that are heavy in the trade now, like the series.
Oh, you know, those ones.
You do have a Molly's White. Okay. But I think you brought that, right?
Yeah, that's in that pot over there. It was a gift from...
right.
No, it was a gift from a garden club. It was a gift.
Okay, so those, they're like Eric Smithii, Ballardii, Glendorfensis, I think. And all of those are the sort of newer up-facing hybrids, or not up-facing, outward-facing hybrids. These are still the nodding heads, beautiful nodding heads.
I'm going to go crazy. Vigorous. I'm going to go crazy with the bulbs next fall. Right?
Yeah.
Now I know I can. I didn't know what would come up.
Oh, yeah. So make sure you mark this with a lot of photos, not just you walking through here and seeing your smiling face, but, you know, marked so that you can see where to put those bulbs. And I would go into early daffodils first that can really pull off those hellebores. So some of the little cyclamenous type daffodils.
Tete-a-tete.
Not just tete-a-tete. I was just about to say,
that's the only one I know. It's the only one I know.
There's so many. There's a great garden rant about that. We had Victoria Summerlee from the UK talk about that. She said that tete-a-tete was the bulb that ate the world. And she wanted to say that ate the world, the tete-a-tete,
the tetification.
Yeah, but she has a list on there on that article of some really great early bloomings that are not just February golden, but they really give body to those hellebores as they're coming up. And this is, you know, if you're timing this with all of these different bulbs coming and going, the snowdrops that I gave you.
The galanthus. So what type did you bring me? The Elwesii?
Elwesii. Yeah. So I brought you Elwesii. I can't tell you if it's Monostrictus, or not mono, it isn't Monostrictus, but I can't tell you if it's a LSEI, VAR, LSEI, or I don't know my snowdrops.
Come on,
that
my
well.
Eyes are glazing over. Let's just move on.
All right. They are snowdrops, baby.
Okay.
And
I like
they
those.
Have a large, wide gray leaf that is very striking.
Love it.
And they will, they would look actually, I would probably, this area.
Right here, in the corner of the bowling alley that's turning toward the terrace.
I think, and then as the hellebores are coming up, I think you're just going to be super happy with that.
Okay. We got our random blueberries on the fence.
Yes, which are so healthy looking. I mean, look at those buds.
I pruned the heck out of them. They're probably like, wow, what'd you do?
Yeah, that's not a magnolia. I want to put money on that. You know why? It's double budded.
Okay.
At the top. It can't be a magnolia.
We got a mystery tree that emerged when I took my hacksaw to two camellias that were saying, we're going to just take you over. And so now it has emerged, but we don't know what it is. It's a tree. It's got buds. I'll let TBD.
Yeah. I wonder if it's a Lindera. Huh.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. No, it's not a Lindera.
Never mind. Okay. Blueberries.
Moving
and
on.
Then, all right, we're moving down past the...
Yeah, so last night we came, past the silver lining. This is such a great shrub. And this is actually, I found a Chet Baker song, Silver Lining, that I've been putting on the back of the Instagram things about plants for the winter garden, because we should look for the silver lining in the winter garden. And this pyracantha, it's healthy, it's happy, it's just such a great variety. It's interesting, it's got a rosy blush to it. And then the variegation, it's a great plant.
And the absolutely masterful pruning of it?
Well, I mean, yes.
I mean, it was dangerous before.
Oh, yeah, it would be dangerous. Mm-hmm. I mean, you don't play around with this, but yeah, it is a masterful pruning. And pyracantha responds so well to that type of espalier or any type of wall pruning that you do with them. But you've done a great job with that. I'm so glad you didn't take it out.
Yeah,
because it's dangerous and it's prickly.
No, I wouldn't do that.
Also, this is an interesting view looking down the hill.
And so if you can picture, I have an absurdly big lawn for an absurdly small lot. And I'm thinking a garden in the middle of that lawn because ain't nobody kicking a ball there with some service berries, with some Amsonia, with an oak tree, you know, something quite big and very low maintenance and very sunny and very native-y.
I love the idea of Amsonia there because it's just going to be a fall popper mm-hmm. and a spring popper and then just get on with life during the summer.
Right. It's a green blob. It moves in the wind, though.
And whichever one you want to do. But I think, you know, Hubrectii is an old favorite and a good one. Mount Cuba just came out with their Amsonia report.
Ooh,
so
I'll have to look
and
it up.
It is a good one.
Peggy
and it's a
Cornett.
10-year.
Peggy Cornett swears by one that was native down to where she was in the sand hills of North Carolina. And I have research on what the name of that is. You wouldn't know off the top of your head, would you?
I would not.
No. I'll look that one up because she says it's better than Hubrectii.
Okay. All righty.
And it has the fine leaves also.
It's maybe Insularis?
Unclear.
Oh, well.
Unclear.
Okay.
I'll find out.
Your eyes just glazed over right there.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, well, go and get their report.
Okay.
And actually, they will probably send it to you, and it's a beautiful report. They still print it for old fogies like me.
Nice.
Who love to look through pages.
Morning, Andy.
Oh, good morning.
How are
good
you?
Morning.
This is my friend, Marianne.
Hi.
We're in Weeds.
Oh, good for
good.
You.
What I was going to say before we walked down that hill was that whatever it is, which
we thought, what did we think immediately? We thought Cryptomeria, but it's just too stiff.
It was just the cones that made me think that. And I thought it was possibly an obtuse, Chamaecyparis obtusa, like a torulosa.
Yeah.
But it's not, because I grow that. It's definitely not. But in any case, whatever the heck it is, it has such a good shape and it stops your eye halfway down the slope so you don't just go straight out to the road with your eye. And that's fantastic.
Yeah.
Because it that can help you to, as you're up here, it stops you so that you come and you start to look into this area here.
And if you start to fall down the very steep hill, you will roll into the very prickly bush.
But otherwise, you can see if you did not have this here, you just come here and you're there to the road.
Yeah, I love the curve of it, and I'll continue to play with that.
Yeah, so that's great. I am now very intrigued by what this is.
Yeah, no idea.
The cones are so cryptomeria, though.
They are. I wonder if there's a stiff, prickly, horrible cryptomeria that I've inherited. I'll put more agaves out on this wall. It's the hottest little wall. And then we're down here at the bottom where...
Leslie has just discovered that she owns a Taylor's Juniper and has for a long time in a pot.
I was one of those. Oh, wait, there's one in that pot.
So we stood, 5 feet from this last night? And she's going, so what are they like? Are they good? Shouldn't I get one of these?
They look just like that.
There's one right there in a pot that you moved from your other
house. That weighs 100 pounds, and I hired somebody to move it for me. And so it's going to grow out of that pot, and I think it's going to go right where it is, and the pot's going to have something else.
I think it is. This is the juniper that probably this will become the green giant of junipers, sadly, as they do. You know, you start growing something, everybody wants to grow it. This is a very tall juniper that stays as skinny as they can be, because a lot of junipers, Blue Point, Blue Arrow, Skyrocket, they get middle-aged and spready like we all do. Like
we're so spready.
So spready. And this Taylor's doesn't. It's as close as we can get to an Italian cypress for us Californians. And
it's going to really help. As I'm standing at that window doing my dishes, I look out at what Andy has, my neighbor. And if you look through those cute little round boxwoods, you know, Andy's not a gardener. He has vinca and boxwoods, mm-hmm. and that's it.
Hey.
But, hey, I love, there's just this sort of, it's just kind of Italian, kind of hillside, kind of Rome as I look down and see those shapes. And this will be part of it.
Yeah, there are a lot of shapes here on this corner. This has been really well planted between you and your neighbor. I know, again, you had nothing to do with
nothing.
I like to think that you would have done this, though.
Oh, yeah.
But it's really well planted, so there's bones here. This is a perfect example of good garden bones.
I planted a little, it's not Limelight, but it's the next iteration of super duper new Prime Light, maybe.
Yeah.
And it's going to be there, so that's going to be a nice round white thing, mm-hmm. As it grows. And there's another one over there that will make me have the courage to rip out those Barberry,
right,
possibly in the future.
Right. Yeah, so we were on the fence on this. Do you take them out? They provide privacy. Do you just see how you like them this year? It's a tough one.
It is. And pruning them is kind of no fun because those splinters go right through your gloves.
Yeah.
So I'll see. I'll see. I'm not in love for sure. And I also don't want those seeds to go all over the world.
But don't you think that it's important when you move into a new place not to move too hastily?
Oh, absolutely. I've been very patient, except for getting rid of the bowling alley was a lawn. Mm-hmm. And now it's a marble path surrounded by some of my cutest plants that made the travel team.
Right.
And we'll see what comes up. So that's the only big change I made, but that was to create as opposed to editing.
Right. Yeah. And this would make a big difference here if you took those out. So you've got to really sit with it and decide, I like it? Do I not?
Yeah. And we moved in September. I mean, we hardly had time to look.
You didn't get a full growing season. You don't know. I mean, it may be absolutely vile. I happen to not particularly like that cultivar because I struggle with it, but I have it planted poorly in shade where it doesn't do what it's meant to do. And we have to look at that. Like, that's my experience growing it, but it's not a full experience growing that plant.
Right. And then the only other thing that we should probably wrap this up and get you on your way. Marianne's visiting from Lovitz.
And she's just tired of me talking, so she's desperate for me to get on the road.
Wrap this up, Jesus.
I think what you said was, Michael must miss you. I think that's what you said.
Yeah, I said that.
Yeah, it's burned.
I had a weeping something. I suspected it would be a cherry, and then it started doing all these fuzzy things, and it's a pussy willow, which makes me happy.
A weeping pussy willow, and it's really well placed here on the corner. And you did a lot of surgery to make it.
So much surgery. All the branches were growing into the ground, and then there was trying to be grass under there, so I re-edged this without asking anybody's permission. I'm like, you know, I'm not going to go to the board to say I need a foot less grass and a foot more garden when there already should be garden there.
So right.
I just did it.
One of the best bits of advice I've ever gotten from a gardener was Joanne White out in Seattle, and it was only a couple years ago, and she was talking about her Japanese maples and said, be bold as you prune. Don't be afraid to be bold and get in there and give them some light and don't be scared.
I haven't done this one at all yet, and it's, you know, there's a lot to do, but I was thinking that it would be sad to lose those leaves, which stayed. I mean, they do that Marcescens thing where the leaves don't go in the
winter.
Yeah,
a lot of the really heavily dissected dwarfs do that. They hold on to those leaves.
Yeah. But so, now it's time because I can see the buds.
Now they're just looking ready. Yeah.
So that's maybe that's today.
Maybe that's today. And since Michael misses me, I'll get on the road. And I'm not leaving without that hellebore.
Yes, you are, because you're coming back in 3 weeks.
I've seen promises like that. They never pan
you
out.
You brought me beautiful things. I am not... no, I want to enjoy that for a few more weeks, a few more days.
Alrighty.
And I will. All right. Thanks, girl.
All right.
Well, I hope you enjoyed that little garden stroll. Did you love it when my air handler kicked in almost as soon as we began? And instead of starting over, we simply, dissolved into giggles. Sorry about that. Marianne actually got me very much inspired about this garden, and she didn't shame me too much on the fact that really nothing that's going on here is my doing. Well, not in the front anyway. The bowling alley, that really narrow bit in the back, I've got to take credit for that. Who needs a long, narrow lawn when you just could have a lovely white marble path lined with some of your favorite plants that you've taken the trouble to bring from your old garden? I probably mentioned that as I took up the lawn back there, sort of patch by patch on my hands and knees, and I would just flip pieces of turf over and nestle them around my meager transplants that I had brought from Minor Road as a sort of a mulch. Plus, what was I going to do with that stuff? I don't have a proper compost pile here. I really can't have one. I'm going to talk more about that in a moment. So I was curious to see whether these pieces of flipped up turf would do more harm than good, but as it turned out, they seem to have died, and I've poked around enough back there to know that I didn't, like, bury my plants under too much weight. The guys in my HOA mulch all the gardens in my neighborhood in fall. Who am I to say no to free mulch? I mean, I always say yes to free mulch in terms of leaves falling out of trees, but a little hardwood bark? Sure, bring it. So there was a thin layer of that on top of what is now sort of mixed in turf, clay, dying turf, clay. Well, I've poked and prodded, and it seems like most of the plants that I remember planting back there, it was kind of a blur, are coming up. The compost situation is really too bad. So I had this plastic tumbler that I used to load with kitchen compost back in my old big garden. At that big garden, I had 10 outdoor compost piles. It was a big property. But I would use the tumbler for kitchen compost, and I would, you know, roll that around, adding some brown things so it wasn't too horribly anaerobic and fetid. I would roll that around for a few months, and then I would empty it into one of the outdoor compost piles. And what I was emptying was sludgy and kind of gross, but not like, oh yeah, that's a banana peel. I couldn't tell that anymore, so I didn't have any critters coming. So I brought the tumbler with me thinking that I could hide that bad boy underneath one of those weeping Japanese maples. Well, good in theory, but hey, they needed a haircut. And then the plastic is kind of bigger than I thought and kind of visible. And I just didn't want to ruffle anybody's feathers. And it would have been difficult to access. Also, Jeff was feeling discomfort in the rule-following game that we are now playing. By the way, I think I mentioned that I didn't ask anybody's permission to build any sort of garden back in the bowling alley. The excuse being, why would I want to take up the valuable time of a group of people doing community service to serve on a neighborhood committee to get permission to change something that no one can see except for me? So that was my thinking on that. By the way, I am on that committee now. And I showed them. I'm like, this is what I did, but nobody can see it. And they're like, oh yeah, that's fine. But anyway, the compost. So I'm doing chop and drop where I can up on the hill above the retaining wall. And I can't wait for my calicarpa or whatever to leaf out, because that's a lot of chop and drop we're staring at an angle, just so obvious, but you know, this will happen. I think I'm going to put a bunch of hellebores up there, and that's going to hide it better in future years. So that's a plan. And then my largest container, which is a beautiful porcelain sort of blue-green affair, I was going to use that as a water feature back in the bowling alley, but now it's my compost pile because it's really gorgeous. It's about 4 feet tall and 3 feet across, and whatever I can't fit in there, I have to take to a dumpster that this neighborhood uses. That stuff probably goes into a landfill, but I can't solve that problem at this time. And then for the kitchen garbage, okay, now you're really interested. I'm doing something called Bokashi composting. That deserves more time and a completely different episode that those of you who really don't care don't have to listen to. But suffice it to say that there's some interesting smells. And you make this sort of a tea. And if you don't put enough of the component that breaks things down, you're in big trouble because it smells like something's died in your house. Even though I'm in the basement, that seems to be sort of the origin of the air that's pumping through the rest of the house. Because in my unfortunate first batch, there were some really bad smells that all of a sudden became bad smells, not just in my little garden room, but all over the house. So I'm learning. And I've also been told that if I don't figure out how to do it better, it can't be happening in my house. That is so fair. I would never have Jeff create smells like that. So I'm figuring it out. All right, something about Bokashi somewhere in the future, but not today. You can breathe easy. Okay, back to our garden stroll, Marianne and me. Other touches of authenticity that I hope were not lost on you include our overly enthusiastic desire to have crunching gravel under boots, that footstep thing going on. And that was a win, although we were probably too noisy. Our goal was to make it sound like, you know, Gardener's Question Time. Now we realize that the myriad of people who work at BBC Sounds probably insert the audio for boots on gravel. I'm sure they have an MP3 file lying around someplace that would cover that, and maybe even birds chirping. But we, Marianne and I, were so authentic. Saying hello to my neighbor who was out weeding when he didn't have to be, that was authentic. He didn't have to be because within the HOA, we pay to have our gardens taken care of. Of course, I'm paying that money and I'm telling them to stay the heck away because I got this. But that's just the way the world works. Andy, my neighbor, also doesn't have to do anything. But apparently the little spring weeds were making him crazy. Hey, you don't want to ruin the look of a good, smooth bed of mulch. No, I'm kidding. He has some lovely boxwoods that he grows and he keeps it neat. And everybody should have the garden that they want. So, you know, good on him for getting out there. I wonder if you remember that we could not figure out the name of an Amsonia that I knew I was interested in. That's not my one that I go to usually, which is the Hubrictii. That's the real thin leaves, the Hubrictii. And it gets tall. It gets like 5 by 5, 4 by 5. It gets wide over the years. But anyway, I was trying to remember Peggy Cornett's favorite. She is the curator of plants at nearby Monticello, an acquaintance of both Marianne's and mine. She grew up in the sand hills of North Carolina, so her favorite Amsonia is not the Hubrictii, but the Ciliata. That's Ciliata. And so I texted her afterwards. I'm like, hey, what was that Amsonia that you like? Some people call this one that she likes the sand hills Amsonia. It's smaller and more compact than the Hubrictii, so I thought it might be fun for me to have both in that garden that I've got in my head and that I will probably design and need to get approval for because it's in front next fall. I'll keep you posted. And about the Taylor's juniper that Marianne is so in love with, and it grows so tall and only 2 to 3 feet in width. Well, I was intrigued, but I got to tell you, I think that what I have in that pot is not a Taylor juniper. I think that I have a skyrocket because that's the only kind I've ever bought. And I remember buying that for a Christmas arrangement for a client. You know, I haven't owned this business for 2.5 years, so it's old. And they didn't want it, so I kept it. It's going to look fabulous, whether it's Taylor or whether it's skyrocket, between those two boxwoods in that bed, which are, I don't know how to say this, pyramidal. They're like pyramids. So I think it's going to look really good there. You know, it's got a real blue-gray color. So Marianne said that the Taylor juniper is the only one that doesn't get spready, like my waist, but skyrocket doesn't either. I mean, according to all the stuff you see online, it doesn't get any more than 2 feet across. The difference is that the Taylor juniper gets up to 30 feet tall, 3-0, whereas the skyrocket might max out at about 20. So if you're thinking perspective, you should go with the Taylor because it's going to look thinner when it's 30 feet tall. And lastly, when Marianne said she wanted that hellebore, she ended up getting that hellebore that day. She sort of insisted, and she had brought me some lovely snowdrops. So what's a girl to do? Off she went with half my damn hellebore. If you want to see the burglary in the act, have a look at my Instagram. It's there. Let me end this episode with a few things that might be good for the general gardener, like you, instead of just being totally selfish about my garden. I hope you're enjoying March, which has been lovely here in Virginia, although we've had quite a few hot days, which is unsettling. You know, you don't really want to be able to sit outside and have a beer at 6 o'clock at night in early March. But now we're back to cool mostly, and mostly above freezing. So I'm starting to shift all those plants that were gracious enough to last the winter under my care into the garage, where it gets cool at night, but not really cool, and there's a little bit of sunlight. So that's their intermediate step before they go back into the wild world of better care, actually, through Mother Nature and a smattering of water from me. Whether you like to shift your houseplants outside or just keep them inside, be aware that they are waking up with the more intense light levels, and it's okay to start fertilizing them again to get more growth if you want to, and for their general health. You probably held off on that over the course of winter because they were just hanging out and not needing to grow a lot. By the way, the combination of moving them outside and fertilizer will really perk them up if you're interested. But don't throw them outside without giving them a little preview of the not 70 degrees in your house type temperature. And even if they love sun, they won't love sun all at once. So just a few hours a day until they're ready and they have that base for their savage tan. Hey, if you have a favorite shrub that you're growing and you're like, wow, I wish I had more of that shrub, don't forget that you can go shopping or you can employ the incredibly easy and satisfying way of propagating called layering. You just grab a bendy branch and you dig a little hole where you can bend that branch right into the ground. And maybe you nick the bark to like sort of encourage it, but that's not entirely necessary. Now, just to be clear, you're not burying the whole branch. You just bury the bendy bit that you've bent down. And then you place a rock on top of that to help it stay down there and to remind you about a year from now when you're like, why is that rock next to that bush? And you will remember that you wanted a new bush and you probably have one because what you buried will have rooted. So then you cut off the branch. You plant the end with the roots. Am I insulting your intelligence now? Sorry. But anyway, then you have a new plant. Are your beds dry enough to walk on? Just be careful if you've had a lot of rain or snow because soil compaction is not something you want in your garden. Your soil, well, your plants, want lots of air in the soil. It's really good for their roots. So don't be walking all over it if it feels all squishy. It's a great time to edge your beds. That look, a neat, newly edged bed, it just says, you are ready. You are ready for the season. I love doing that right now, especially since I have very little to edge. I feel like it just makes everything so neat and primed. If you haven't pruned your roses or anything else that's looking shaggy or tatty and that you don't like the looks of, then give that a go. Remember, you can take away any dead, diseased, or crossing branches, or if you just want to reduce the height. Be aware if it's a spring flowering shrubs, you might be nicking away this spring's flowers. So if you want to be safe, always prune a shrub after it's flowered. But it is not too late to prune roses if you want to do that. And by the way, so many plants don't need any pruning from you at all. So it's really a choice you make in terms of how you want your garden to look. Oh, don't forget to try the chop and drop method, especially if it's in a place that's not highly visible. So instead of lugging things off to your compost pile, you just create a little compost pile wherever you go, like the magic garden nymph that you are. A couple of announcements about the podcast. Just a reminder that I do not have official sponsors anymore. And the reason for that is because I'm just not quite sure I want to put out a podcast every 2 weeks. It might be every 3 weeks, or it might be 2 weeks, or it might be I don't know when. And I just thought, I want to continue doing this because I love doing it, but I don't want to be beholden to anybody else but me and my whims. That being said, I would never turn down a contribution on my website. Just go to any of the blog posts, which I don't seem to be writing anymore with any regularity, but go to an old one and find a place where you can donate a cup of coffee to me. I appreciate it, a little something for the time I put in. Another thing that's going to make it so I'm not working too hard at this is not hunting too hard for guests. I have some good ones lined up, and I'll continue to connect with people in the horticulture world. I love talking with them, so I will have some good guests on. But if you have somebody that you think has an interesting message, and by the way, to be on this podcast, the person has to have a sense of humor. If there's a connection that you want to let me know about it, reach out to me. You can get in touch with me on my website, which is lhgardens.com, or you can DM me on Instagram, and I am Leslie Harris, LH there. But I sure hope you like the sound of Marianne Wilburn's voice, because She has agreed to be my, let's say, Ken Drews to Margaret Roach. If you listen to Margaret Roach's gardening podcast, you realize that she calls on Ken quite a bit. And I bet that's because Ken's a fabulous gardener, he's written a bunch of books, and they have a good time together. All of those reasons fit my future heightened collaboration with Marianne. You know, it also works for me because I've had to downsize to the extent where there's just going to be some gardening things that I should be talking about and I'm kind of missing out on personally in this little tiny garden. Whereas Marianne gardens up a storm on acres and acres. Also, she's a writer for that fabulous garden blog called Garden Rant that I bet you read. And she could bring us any number of whiny complaints. I mean, she could bring us any number of fascinating perspectives on the different topics of horticulture. So that's the future of this podcast. The occasional guests, lots of Marianne, me doing exactly what I like and when I like it. Does it sound good? I hope so. I am in my garden and I am into doing this podcast. I really like it. I love talking with you all and connecting with you. I just want to make sure it stays fun for me so I can keep doing it for a long time and we can grow old together in our gardens. So go get into yours and I'll be chatting to you again in a few weeks. Oh, and thanks for listening.